we're going to look at now is just a short opportunity to consider the question of what happens when I don't know what to do, and yet I am asked to know what to do. I don't know if you've ever been in such a scenario. What we're going to look at is, I'm going to give you, there's four stories that I brought. They're very short. They are stories. If you only get through, you know, my apology, if you go slow, that's fine. If you only get through the first two of them, that's fine. I certainly don't need to do all four of them, but it's very short. It's one double-sided page, and there are guiding questions on the back. Which I would encourage you to look at, but you can also just come up with your own questions. What I like about these stories is that they are fundamentally different models about what it means to deal with the same problem, the same challenge, the same question. And I'd be curious to hear from you sort of which resonated with you, which even if you don't necessarily want to resonate with it. Did anyone resonate with the first story? This is how I handle these problems. Yeah. Oh, see, you guys are chavrutas. Amazing. Let's take a look at this first story. You all got to the first story? Kinach nafshei derav, when Rav dies, azlu talmidav batrei, his students went after him. And I think that sort of the translation adds, you know, to make it clear about what they were going after, but they were literally following after him, even though he's dead, right? They followed him. Ki hadre, when they returned, they said, "Nezo v'necho lachma anahar danak." Let's go eat some bread at the river Danak. Now, what is the river Danak? This is on the theory that in Talmudic stories, there are so few details that the details that are given are worth looking into. So if you actually look up, and also the idea that place names and people names have certain meaning and resonance, not just Amsterdam Avenue. It actually means something. So Danak means to choke or to sob. Okay? Sob, to cry, to weep. So the idea is that they went to a river, the sort of the weeping river, as it were. That's the, you know, the foreshadow, as it were.
Because the rabbi died.
Because the rabbi died, right. It's the place that you would go after the funeral, okay? And after they ate, b'tarta karchi, yathi v'kami b'ayelahu. What do you do? Good rabbis, what do? You have your meal, and then you engage in a halachic discussion, right? What are we supposed to do? But this is not just a regular discussion. Theoretically, it's actually a practical discussion. Then they ask, did we learn that if they reclined, it's considered a joint meal? But if they merely sat together, it's not considered a joint meal, and then we all say the grace after meal individually. In other words, what defines a meal? How do I know if I've partaken in a meal? Do we actually physically have to recline? Those of you who are learning with us Sukkah, the idea of like lying down on the couch to fit into that 10 tvachim sukkah height, right? Is that what a meal looks like, where you're actually, in some meal furniture? Or if we just sat together, is that considered a meal, right? Or perhaps since they said, let us go and eat in such and such a place, it is considered as if they reclined together, right? What makes a meal? Is it the physical setup of the meal or the intention behind the meal, right? Reasonable question? Totally reasonable question. What's the answer? I don't know. Right? Lo hava b'yadayu. It wasn't within their grasp. They couldn't hold on to it. That phrase, actually, it's amazing. In a supposedly a law book, right? The Talmud is supposedly about transmitting the law or elucidating the law. The number of times that it says lo hava b'yadayu, we didn't know the answer, is striking. It's like, it happens. We don't know the answer to the question. So what happens when they don't know the answer? Rav Anna bar Ava, ahadar kare lachore. Rav Anna bar Ava had already ripped his shirt. He turned around his cloak, and he ripped it again. Right? Why did he rip? What was ripped the first time? The death of the rabbi, the death of Rav. And then he rips it again. He says, Nach nafshei de Rav, v'yirkat mezona lo gamrinan. Our rabbi died, Rav is dead. This is the Rav that we saw in the morning in the Magid section, the one who tells us that it was about our ancestors being idol worshippers. Rav died, and we don't even know how to do birkat hamazon. Right? We are left completely bereft. We can't even go through a meal without feeling lost around our missing rabbi. How does it resolve? Ad'ata usaba, until a particular older man came, and he resolved it for them. Since they said, let's go and eat in such and such a place, it is considered as if they reclined, and therefore they are required to do the birkat hamazon. So the formal question gets resolved. What do you make of this experience? What sort of emerged for you in this way of how do I deal with something I don't know how to answer?
You go to this zaken, I don't know anything about him.
Yeah. What does the zaken represent in this story? Yeah, so he resents some sort of wisdom, right? Did they go to the chacham? He shows up. How long were they there on the banks of this weeping river, right? Wondering. It's like you're completely paralyzed, you know. Do we bench? Do we not bench? And then eventually this old man comes. He says, let me solve it for you here, right?
Yeah. Well, you first have to admit that you don't have something, that you don't know something. So until he says it, nobody offers a solution.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they're willing to admit, I think, pretty quickly, we don't know. We ask this good question, but we don't know the answer. And then we have no way of moving forward, right? And, I mean, yeah.
So I was thinking that what I saw in the story was this idea that their expectation was that only Rav has this answer, but that answers can come from unexpected places and don't hold one person as the only source of your information.
Ah, good. Their assumption is Rav is dead and we can never answer this question, right? What's another pathway they could have gone? You're suggesting, well, it might be that other people know the answer to this question. In fact, that's how the story resolves. Another way is, yeah?
That they know the answer the whole time. They suggest it. Actually, when we were reading it together, I wondered if this was a commentary on there's an idea that revelation is this period and that every generation it filters less and less and less and to always reach back for an elder authority. But what that ends up doing, especially in even Orthodox circles, it disempowers the rabbinate and modernity because they can't go back and contradict people. They don't want to, believe in their authority, believe in their own knowledge and power, and that means they can't make rabbinic rulings.
Yeah, it's striking that they actually do. They actually suggested what the answer is, but they didn't move in that direction. Now, if I were to tell you, this is not a bunch of lay people, this is a bunch of rabbis. What's a rabbi? Somebody who's supposed to be able to figure out the answer to a kind of question like this, right? But these rabbis are not able to do that, or they think they can't do it in that moment, and as a result, only when this externalized source, voice of wisdom and tradition sort of shows up on the scene are they able to move forward at all. Yeah.
But they're also grieving. So I think this points to, what is our emotional state and how does that impact our ability to answer questions, to search for other people, to believe in ourselves. That's also a part of how we respond to something.
Good. So it's not just that, hey, I don't know, let's go, we'll check it out when we go home, right? It's like Rav Adam Bar Ava goes, he is bereft with grief. He was mourning all over again, right? And as a result, maybe it's they're clouded by their state of grief. They can't allow them to move forward. Yeah, Joey.
Yeah, and to piggyback on that, I felt that there was significance in the fact that it was a Hahu Sava and not Hahu Gavra. Like, it wasn't just some guy. It was some elder, and that in some way was, filling the space of their lost realm.
Yeah, you saw the last text on the bottom of page 2. There is a tradition from Tosfot that says that whenever it says Hahu Sava, it actually means Elijah. Right? Now, Elijah is the embodiment of tradition and somebody who's going to resolve all of our conflicts because he knows, right? That's sort of, it would be awesome if Elijah would just walk in and tell me the answer. Now, what do you make of Rav? What kind of a teacher is Rav that Rav has students like this?
Loyal.
It's Sorry?
They're very loyal to him. They don't even...
Okay, the students are very loyal to Rav, that's for sure, yeah.
You could say like an authoritarian teacher, maybe, that he doesn't allow the students to have the confidence to make their own...
Right, so it depends on the grief state here. Like, if the grief is overriding their normal... In a normal... If you ask them 3 weeks later and they're able to do it, so maybe... Or maybe it's the kind of baby drash that Rav had, where the students didn't feel empowered that they could actually come up... They came up with the option, but they weren't able to sort of get to the conclusion... Because they would either rely on Rav, or Rav doesn't sort of engender that as part of what his baby drash is. Yeah.
I was also noticing that the dilemma is about whether or not it's a joint meal, not just a meal, so that they can make the blessings of being in a community, being a part of a minyan. So I think they're asking, like, okay, are we community? Are we friends? And it took maybe an outsider looking in to be able to say, yeah, you guys are a group, and you are all students of Rav. And so when you were saying, what's the relationship? Maybe Rav was teaching one-on-one, and they didn't have a relationship with each other. Now they're wondering if after the shared
beautiful
experience...
Beautiful, right. To what extent does a loss in our community or a loss of a teacher highlight the ways in which we are a community of students or not?
Yeah.
And that's really what's at stake. And it takes an outsider or an elder to say, no, you really are a community of learners, and you're going to sort of reforge yourself as such. It's a beautiful read, yeah.
Well, and also I would add that, you know, the question is really, are we sitting Shiva together or separate?
Yeah. Good,
we're
right?
Together telling stories about Rav, then of course we're you know, we're depending on one another for mutual support.
Good. It's not just any meal, it's a meal that's said right after the funeral. And what's our experience in that moment? Are we all sort of individually mourning, or do we come together as a community to mourn? All those issues are at play here. Alright, now let's contrast that with the next story, the story of Rav Ashi in the city who went to the city of Machoza. I love this story. I love them all, but I mean, this one's awesome. You're teaching Arabic stuff. Amrule, Likdish Lanmar Kiddush Rabba. You imagine, like, Rav Ashi is the scholar in residence in Machoza. And it's like, oh, here's, let me give you an honor. And they sort of hand him the goblet of wine and say, would you please make Kiddush? Right? Now think about this for a second. What do we call Kiddush Rabba? When is this supposedly happening? When's Kiddush Rabba take place?
Shabbos Day.
Okay? Now, Shabbos Day Kiddush is a very strange Kiddush. Why? Friday night, I make my Kiddush, and I say the blessing over the wine, and then I say, Baruch Adash Hashem Mekadesh HaShabbat, who sanctifies the Sabbath. That makes sense to me. Why? Because on Friday night, I'm turning Chol into Shabbat. I'm marking the transition from Chol into Shabbat. But what about the day Kiddush? What am I supposed to do in the day? What am I Mekadeshing in the middle of Shabbat? There's nothing to Mekadesh. I'm already in Kodesh. Right? And what's the way that we... What's our Kiddush on... We call it Kiddush. What's our Kiddush on Shabbat day? What's the blessing? Just Borei Pri Hagafen. It's just about the... And there is no Mekadesh on Shabbat during the day. So, the idea that you would say any Kiddush in the middle of Shabbat, something called Kiddush, in the middle of Shabbat is strange. Okay? And Rav Ashi is showing up, and it turns out he doesn't know this practice. But they do know about the practice, or maybe they want to find out what the practice is, and they give him the cup, habule. And then what does he do? Savar. Okay? He reasons. He thinks to himself, my new Kiddush Rabba? What is Kiddush Rabba? Right? Now at this point, what could he have done? What's the options that are before him?
Asking a question.
Make it up. Ask a question. Right? Why didn't he just say, hey everybody, could you just tell me what Kiddush Rabba is? I'm pretty sure I know it, but if you could just remind me, right? Or what page is Kiddush Rabba on, please? So I,
how do you do that here?
Yeah?
How do you do that here,
right? So why doesn't he ask a question? Why doesn't he go down that path?
He's Rav Ashi.
Maybe he would be embarrassed, right? What does he represent in that moment if he actually sort of tips his hand and says, I'm ignorant? Then there is actually something that's taken away from him. Maybe, right? There are some times when it's worth the gamble of the making it up strategy, right? So he makes it up. So what does he say? He thinks, all right, mikti kol abrachot kulan bari pri agafen amre bereisha. Since all blessings that have a cup of wine start with borei pri agafen, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to say borei pri agafen. And then he pauses. I love the pause, right? So he says Borei Pri Hagafen, and he kind of like looks around. And then the guy in the back says, L'chaim, drinks the cup, and he's like, and he finishes by saying, Hachacham inab berosho, right? V'aksil b'choshach yalo. the wise person has the eyes in his head. That is to say, what does it mean to be wise in this selection? You figure it out. Right? Savar. He reasoned. He did what you're supposed to do by logic. Okay? So now, who resonates with this approach to, I don't know what to do? Yeah? Yeah? Okay, good. Rabbis, educators. Okay. So, I don't, and even up until today, actually, what we say, the text of Kiddusha Rabbah is very, it's varied, right? In Ashkenaz, they say Vishamru, which is just a set of verses that come before Borei Pri HaGafen. And in other places, they say other verses that come before Borei Pri HaGafen. It's not so clear. But here, this is at least an example of somebody who was saying, you know what? I'm just going to fake it till I make it. And is there some value in that, as opposed to the waiting for Elijah, the Saba, someone else to show up on the scene and solve it for me? Yeah, Lori.
Well, we didn't just take it as fake it till I make it. We kind of, the wise man with eyes in his head, we actually really took that literally.
Yeah.
Like, when you arrive at a new place, you can look around, whether it's a new country, a new synagogue, a new whatever, you kind of can look around and you can see how are people dressed, when do people stand, what are they... And you can kind of start to acclimate yourself based on only what you see to trying to fit yourself in.
Great. He saw the old man who nodded after he drank, and he was like, I did it. I made it. So he was actually open-eyed, sort of taking in the data, and as a result, being able to assimilate what the right thing to do was. Yeah.
Just to be devil's advocate, like, there's the... on the notion that you shouldn't embarrass someone.
Yeah,
right.
Like, what if the old man was like, yikes, he didn't do it, but like we don't want to embarrass him, so I'm going to drink and like kind of give him the nod of...
yeah, now it's interesting, okay. Right, there are old men in both of the stories, and what Ivy's suggesting is the old man is actually ratifying what he did, even though it wasn't the Kiddusha Rabbah that they were looking for. Right? Whatever he ended up doing was wrong or wasn't normative, but this old man sort of rides into the rescue and sort of saves him from that embarrassment, which might be another way
around. He'll never know.
He'll never know? Right. Yeah, Laura.
Could he be also potentially applying this verse to rebuke himself? I had eyes in my head. I could have asked somebody. I'm new in this community. There are clearly sages around me.
Uh-huh.
I could have asked.
Uh-huh, meaning... That guy sort of ratified what I did by his actions, but I should have just asked him.
Right.
Why not? Uh-huh. Okay, good. So let's see the last story here. Sorry, you wanted to say, yeah.
I thought it was funny because Rav Ashi could theoretically be like the elder in the other story, right? Someone comes in and you've invested so much authority in them, and maybe they don't know what they're doing. They're kind of faking it. And I also wanted to mention that this is a moment where the congregation is affirming his leadership. He pauses. He's like, you know? And the guy's like, yes.
Yes, right, yeah.
It's an interesting notion. He's receptive to the congregation. So.
It's you're pointing out also that context matters. You know, Rav Ashi in his own shul, in his own town, is certainly Rav Ashi. But out of context, at what point do you sort of become a beginner again? Become a learner? And how do you sort of prepare yourself for that?
A question.
Yeah.
How this story came about, if he was embarrassed to admit that he doesn't know the Kiddush, so who wrote that story in the end?
Who wrote this? Who's the writer of the story? Yeah. Look, it depends how you read HaChacham Einav Berosho. If you read it as not a self-criticism, but as something that was like, hey, I did this awesome thing, then maybe this is something he reported or somebody reported in the town. I mean, how all these stories are written is a larger question, but... okay, let's look at the very last. The last one we have time for is on the bottom of page 1, Vayikra Rabba. Rabbi Eliezer Chisma went to a place, Azalachar Atar. They say to him, does Rabbi know how to pores al Shema, how to lead the Shema responsibly? And he says to them, no. Does Rabbi know how to lead the Amida, literally how to draw near, Lemikrav? And he said to them, no. They sent him, for nothing do they call you rabbi. His face fell, literally his face turned yellow. He went to Rabbi Akiva, and his face was chulaniut, it was sickly. Rabbi Akiva says to him, why is your face sickly? So he tells him what happened. Now I think this is amazing. Rabbi Akiva says to him, does Rabbi want to learn? And he said, yes. Once he learned, he went back there, back to the town. They said to him, does Rabbi know how to lead the Shema responsibly? He said, yes. does Rabbi know how to lead the Amidah? He said to them, yes. They said, Elazar has become strong, Chasim. And they would call him Rabbi Elazar Chisma. In his name, the story is encoded. Right? He always takes with him this story. So what's the way that he deals with his ignorance here?
He admitted it, and he goes and he studies.
Ah, good. He admits it, and he goes to a teacher. And the teacher is a teacher who's able to say to him, A, tell me what happened. Like, I'm seeing you. I noticed that you look bad. Tell me what happened. And he tells him what happened. And then he says, do you want to learn? He says, yes. Meaning it's a dialogue between a teacher and the student doesn't say, hey, I was just embarrassed in this town, could you please... It's instead, the teacher notices something's wrong. And Rabbi Akiva has this quality in him in other stories. He notices something's wrong, and then he says, would you like to learn? And he says, yes, I would. Right? And then and that's the first time where he says yes. Right? In the other places, he's simply saying no, no. Now, when he goes back there, what also, chasim, chisma, it means here strong. What else is this?
Chasum.
Yeah, like a machsom is a roadblock, right? So it's also a play on words. In the beginning, he is chasum. He's blocked. He can't actually say anything. And by the end, he becomes strong, but how does he exhibit strength? By being the person who says, yes, I want to learn.
But also Elazar is Ra.
Elazar what?
Ezra.
Yes, Elazar. El as Ozer.
Yes.
Yeah. He encoded in his name is also this need for help. God helps. Who resonates with this process? Yeah, okay. And a lot of people don't resonate with that either.
I couldn't not noticing that the parallel between Rabbi Akiva that he didn't know and he had, you know, when he was so older and he went and he studied and then he came back and he was Chazak. The same thing with this. It's like the same.
There's another Saba I play.
It's the same happening that he had in a way. He's giving back.
Oh, Rabbi Akiva himself, because he's somebody who also was able to have the courage to say, I don't know, and wants to learn and spends the time doing that. Yeah, Rabbi Akiva is teaching out of his own place, where he understands how that person could be. So I leave this with you as an opportunity to sort of just consider the possibility that we are not the first generation of Jews, or even Jewish educators, defined broadly, who feel ignorance in certain contexts, in certain times, and the possibility of playing out different scenarios about what it might mean to either cry out and rip your clothes and say, we'll never know, like throw a tantrum about it, you know, I'm never going to be able to figure this out. Or to use some way of reason and say, hey, I can figure this out. Or to say, you know what, I need to learn. I need to be in a relationship with a teacher who sees me, who notices something's wrong with me, and then have the courage to say, yes, I want to learn. These are all options that are not being experienced for the first time in our generation, but are being played out in the Talmud itself among some of the leading rabbis that actually offer teachings in the rest of the Talmud. And hopefully it's an opportunity for us to think about how do we react to these situations, because I think the only thing that's guaranteed is for sure we're going to be in these situations. For sure we're going to be in some place where someone expects us to know something and we don't know it. And what are the range of possibilities that we could react to that scenario? How do we think about that? That's part of what I wanted to leave us with here.